Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
The way I would summarize where we are in this moment is it's a split screen. You have President Trump with his historic achievement last night, foreign policy achievement with the peace deal that's drafted for the Gaza conflict in Israel. And then you have Trump and Republicans who are doing many things for the American people, reducing taxes on hardworking American families and eliminating fraud, waste, and abuse in government and ending the border crisis and the crime crisis and now settling conflicts around the globe. And on the other screen, you have the Democrats, led by Chuck Schumer right now, who's making a mockery of the government shutdown. He was on an interview last night, reported this morning in Punchbowl, and he said, every day of the shutdown gets better for us, meaning him and his party. It's stunning to me. It's tone deaf. Real people are being harmed by this.
That's the Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, talking about the ninth day, is it, of the shutdown. And you know, obviously there's a lot of partisan politics being played here, but ultimately the American people are left hanging in the balance while we try to see if we can get the government back open. We want to welcome back to the show Congressman Eric Burleson. He represents Missouri's 7th Congressional District. He is a member of the House Oversight Committee, the Freedom Caucus, and a member of the Transportation and Infrastructure Committee. Congressman, thank you so much for the time today. It's always great to have you here.
Anytime.
So what do you give us your thoughts on? I'm not going to ask you to comment on other people's thoughts on the shutdown yet. Congressman, I'd like to know what yours are.
Yeah. You know, honestly, Annie, like when I talk to constituents in the district, their response is keep it shut down, shut it down and shut it down permanently. So that's if that gives you an idea where my district is. Now, when it came to this this continuing resolution, I really kind of like had a very hard time voting for it because it is Biden's the extension of his budget. But I think that when everybody's saying, oh, you guys should compromise, that was the compromise. We passed just as clean as possible extension of the same bill that the Democrats led and got through last session, just an extension of that. I don't think they have a leg to stand on. And what they're doing is the equivalent of after the Obamacare had passed or after the Inflation Reduction Act had passed, if the Republican Party had stomped their foot and said, we're not funding the government until you repeal those bills that you passed, That's the equivalent of what the Democrats are asking for. They're asking us to basically undo everything that we have done the last 7 months. Mm. And it's just not acceptable.
Congressman Eric Burleson speaking with us right now. You know, I'm going to ask a question that I think on the surface a lot of people would just kind of laugh at even the existence of a question like this. Because I don't think that most Americans look at Congress and think that Congress is acting in good faith. I think most people who don't, steep themselves in the play-by-play on X or whatever their preferred platform is, because it's a hobby, it's an entertainment opportunity for a lot of people to follow politics, but for a lot of people, they're just repulsed by it. It sounds to me like what you're saying the Republicans did and what you did in voting for the CR as a compromise for you because you think it should have been better, but you were willing to do this to keep the government open. Are the Republicans in the House and in the Senate right now acting in good faith?
Absolutely. Look, the House, the CR that passed the House was agreed to by the Democrats on the Appropriations Committee. There were Democrats that voted for it on the House floor. It is already a bipartisan bill. And that, along with the fact that it is objectively a compromise by us just saying we will extend your stupid Biden era, you know, policies for 7 weeks if you'll just let us keep the government open. That I think that I mean, absolutely. I don't know what if, I feel like I've gotten some criticism for even going that far, but that's kind of where we stand. I feel like we have given them as much as we possibly can without giving up the ball.
So, you know, I hear what you're saying, and I agree with that, because I know that a lot of Republican voters across the country, and certainly in the 7th District here in Missouri, want to see dramatic spending changes with what the Congress is willing to approve and appropriate. The government gets shut down. The Democrats have not agreed to end the filibuster in the Senate. They need a few more. They've got three Democrats who've crossed over. Rand Paul couldn't hold his nose. He hasn't voted for it from the Republican side. But we find out yesterday that the Senate Minority Leader, Chuck Schumer, said regarding the shutdown, every day gets better for us. So my question, similar to the one I just asked you about the Republicans, are the Democrats acting in good faith in these negotiations?
No, that was a very self-centered statement, because it's clear that he cares more about winning for his side and for himself than he does about what's right for the American people. And that, I mean, that statement is pretty damning. I think
you think it was an honest one? You think Chuck Schumer said a little too much honesty there?
I do. And I think what he means by that is that the Democratic Party wins, not necessarily the American people win. And look, I think this is the American people are sick and tired of having their taxpayer dollars go to fund a bunch of crazy, wasteful spending. I personally think that the White House should follow through with some of their plans to do actual terminations as opposed to furloughs. Identify the sacred cows of the Democratic Party and start terminating different agencies one after another. You could start with a few hundred, you know, or a few thousand employees today in one of their sacred cow programs, and then tomorrow, you know, find another program, terminate those employees, and eventually the gnashing of teeth of the left will get so high, I think that they'll come to the table. So that's what I think that we should be doing. You know, the great Charlie Kirk, there's a tweet that he posted back in the day when we were in a government shutdown. And he said that we should use this as a chance to shrink government permanently by privatizing the TSA, privatizing the FAA air traffic controllers, abolishing the IRS, removing non-essential workers, et cetera. And I couldn't agree more.
Congressman Eric Burleson speaking with us right now. You're a member of the Transportation and Infrastructure Committee. Is that something that's realistic? Of course, you say the word privatization and some of those lefties listening to us just fell off their chair. They'll get back up. They'll be fine. How do you privatize something like TSA or air traffic control?
You know, it may have to be a bill that we pass, but I think the White House may have the authority to do it under executive order. We've put the money in place for them to spend. They could then turn around and say, rather than us hire the employees, we're appropriating these funds we're taking bids on contracts. So, but yeah, it's something that I think that this administration should be looking into. I sent messages to Russ Vogt and his team, you know, telling him that my district is excited. They're giddy. When I went to church, people are giddy about talking about, oh, you mean we might actually terminate some wasteful employees in the federal government? That's awesome. So, you know, everywhere I go, that's where my district stands. I think that we should do what Charlie Kirk had suggested and permanently reduce the size of government.
I think the administration has the cojones to do something like that. How long do you see a government shutdown having to last before they say, okay, we're just going to have to make some of these moves?
That's up to the White House and that's up to the president. And, you know, I'm really glad that he's held the line in saying we're not negotiating on Obamacare. You know, the Democratic Party, they didn't they didn't put into this to make these enhanced subsidies permanent. They put an expiration date. This is not something that the Republican Party put in. But what, if you really think about it, Annie, what they're doing is they're holding America hostage, saying, we will allow you to do a CR if you fix what we did with Obamacare. And I think that's just a ridiculous ask, especially to do to, you know, Obamacare is an absolutely failed system that just the costs just keep going through the roof. We need to reform our healthcare system, not continue to fund this broken system.
Congressman Burleson, a question about that specifically, because healthcare is a huge part of the conversation. It's becoming a bigger part. The Democrats are elevating the, you know, concern that we have in this country with our healthcare system, which ironically is a Democrat healthcare system. It's Obamacare. The Affordable Care Act was a Barack Obama baby that we are still living under. They tried to solve something with more government, and guess what? It didn't work. It didn't make it more affordable. It didn't make it better. And we are stuck with it right now. I'm wondering, is there any reason why the Democrats would be using the CR to try to wedge something like this in at this moment? Because once the appropriations process, once we get past the government shutdown, assuming we do, the CR gets passed, assuming it does, are the Republicans looking to do something even bigger with health care in this appropriations process, that they feel like they need to work on this, the Democrats need to work on it now?
Yeah, Annie, I think, I hope that we are willing to do it. I have, whenever we were doing reconciliation version one, which was the One Big Beautiful Bill, I was standing in front of conference saying we should be doing health insurance reform, private health insurance reform as well. And that was not that, you know, that was kind of left on the cutting room floor. But I think that this, it's, everyone acknowledged that something needs to be done. Where we're at is a situation where the Obamacare subsidies, and I think that the, you know, necessity is a great mother of invention, right? If there's this demand, particularly by moderates within the Republican Party and Democrats to extend these enhanced subsidies, then I think that we should be, especially considering the fact that this is not pro-life. Like, this money, there's no Hyde language in this. So there's no universe in which myself or a lot of members can possibly vote for these enhanced subsidies, because it's taxpayer dollars going to fund abortion services.
Yes.
And so once you've come to that conclusion, then you say, okay, well, we're going to put the Hyde language in there that this money can't go towards abortions. That's at the very minimum what a Republican Party should be doing. And then once you've come to that conclusion, you realize, oh, we're not going to get any Democrats to vote for this. And so therefore, if you're going to do it, you need to just go back into reconciliation and do a, you know, might as well like reform the whole thing, you know? And so that's where I'm at. I'm working. My team is working with other members of Congress who are healthcare experts. I have a background in healthcare, worked for 20 plus years as an IT consultant for hospitals, and then served in the Missouri legislature on insurance committees. And so I get it. So I'm working with Chip Roy, Gary Palmer, Kevin Hearn to find out, you know, all of these guys have great reform ideas on how to actually give patients more choices and let them take control and ownership over their health insurance plan, and make sure that these are more affordable.
Oh, man, I mean, that's a real solution is what needs to be provided. I'll read to you before I let you go. We have a comment on the YouTube live stream that is going on while we're doing this interview as well on the radio. They said the ACA provides insurance to people that wouldn't have had it otherwise. It hasn't failed. Republicans defunded it. And I just thought I'd like to hear what you think about that comment.
No, that is a failure. I mean, at the end of the day, there is a cost to healthcare. It's not free. And you can't, until you get to the point where you force doctors to be slaves, it's going to cost money. And that money is going to come in the form of taxpayer dollars or your out-of-pocket dollars. The Democrats set up Obamacare. They passed it in reconciliation without any Republicans supporting it. This is a broken system. I don't see how you could possibly blame Republicans for the failures of Obamacare.
And I would encourage, when looking into this, and I would, this is a parallel conversation to have with the cost of college education, that we always talk about how to afford paying for it, but we don't always ask why things cost what they do. And we've seen the president and this administration, RFK Jr., working towards fair pricing for medications. I always wonder to myself, you know, how fair is the pricing for hospital services? Like, if you can always, if you always can promise that there's going to be somewhere there to write the check, there's really not a whole lot of competition on making sure that the prices stay in a reasonable area. And like I said, parallel conversation on affording college education as well.
Yeah. It, you know, it's like, I always use the analogy, if you went to a restaurant and the waiter knew that somebody else who was not even at the table was paying for it, and the people at the table knew that, that somebody else who was not there is paying for it, then guess what? The waiter is incentivized to jack up the price to, you know, the tab. And so are the people who are eating at the table won't have any, you know, cost incentive whatsoever to, they will pick the most expensive things on the menu. And that's the system that we have today.
That's an incredible analogy. Very well said. Congressman Burleson, we appreciate your time. Please, answer our requests next time we reach out to you, because you're a very strong voice. Having the Freedom Caucus opinion here on the Annie Frye Show is important, and we know you represent Missouri 7th very well. We thank you for the time today.
Thank you, Annie. Anytime.
Sounds good. Bye-bye. Congressman Eric Burleson, the 7th Congressional District Representative in Missouri, also a member of the House Oversight Committee and Freedom Caucus. Okay, take a quick break. Fred Flights is going to be with us when we come back at the bottom of the hour. So about 10 minutes from now, we'll be with you here quickly before that. He's the vice chair for the America First Policy Institute Center for American Security. We're going to talk to him about this peace deal that has been negotiated that is pretty historical. And of course, I don't want to count my chickens, of course, but this one looks like a pretty significant major development in finding peace in the Middle East. We'll talk to Fred Flights at the bottom of the hour. We'll be back with some of your comments on the YouTube live chat poll. Does President Trump deserve a Nobel Peace Prize? Let us know what you think.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts. Just a
shot away. There's so many stories of corruption coming out from the FBI. Pam Bondi has commented on several of these as well. This is one that really caught my eye, but it's not. There's too many big stories for this one to rise to the top. Ryan, I'm curious if you came across this, because I don't think I've seen it. I wouldn't be surprised if maybe Sean Hannity covered it, but I can't watch a whole hour. from John Solomon's report at justthenews.com, then Vice President Joe Biden's team intervened in February 2016 to prevent the CIA from disseminating an intelligence report to policymakers about the perceptions that senior Ukrainian officials held about his son's business dealings, according to now declassified memos. The request that the intelligence community withhold the report from others in the United States government by Biden's national security advisor was, quote, extremely rare and unusual. The vice president's daily briefer told the CIA, quote, I just spoke with VP/NSA, so vice president, national security advisor, and he would strongly prefer that the report not be disseminated. Thanks for understanding. JustTheNews.com reports that this report, reviewed by Just the News, compiled the reactions of senior Ukrainian government officials to the December 2015 visit of Vice President Biden to Kiev. Now, that's the one where that's the famous one. If you don't remember what this visit was specifically, that's where Joe Biden says, son of a bee. And he's talking about getting a special prosecutor fired that was looking into what the company that his son was working for. Our own government, our own CIA, created a report that highlighted that Ukraine was like, this is super sketchy. Hunter Biden's relationship in Burisma, that Ukrainian energy company, where Hunter Biden was getting, what was it? Off the top of my head, it was like $35,000 a month or something like that.
Yeah.
Paid to be on this board. And Joe Biden's job when he went to Ukraine was to tell him to stop being corrupt. And the CIA report said, the Bidens are as corrupt gets. And so the vice president and his NSA, his national security advisor, said, we'd like this to not be disseminated. And they said, okay.
So this would have happened under the Obama administration.
Correct. Then.
Okay, so this is a known issue. Everybody acknowledges that this looks very corrupt or is outright corrupt. Everybody in Ukraine and our own government, our own intelligence.
The report compiled the reactions of senior Ukrainian government officials to the December 2015 visit of Vice President Biden to Kiev.
And so then, was it Vice President Biden that stepped in and said, don't release that?
He and his national security advisor.
So his national security. Okay, so not the DNI, but Biden's DNI, the vice DNI.
In the aftermath of the country's maiden revolution and the Russian seizure of Crimea, Biden had been appointed President Barack Obama's point man to manage U.S. policy towards the fledgling pro-Western government. That would be the Ukrainian government. JustTheNews.com reports the document shows that the Ukrainian officials in the government of then President Petro Poroshenko, remember that name, were disappointed with the vice president's visit to their country for his lack of substantive discussions with their leader. Those same officials privately mused about the United States media scrutiny on Hunter Biden's business dealings in Ukraine. So the Ukrainian officials here, they have this intelligence that they were all like, the media is trying to cover this. And they're coming to Ukraine. It says like fledgling pro-Western government. Everybody knows that Ukraine is a kind of a core of corruption.
Yeah.
And the United States swoops in to try to be like, straighten your tie, get these things right. And then at the end of all of this, it turns into Ukraine's like, clean up your own house before you come over here and start talking crap on ours.
Wow.
It's outrageous. I don't understand it all. How you get to say, no, this information isn't something that we're going to disseminate. Keep this to ourselves. And then our CIA goes, okay. And they don't disseminate it. We're going to take a break. Fred Flights is going to be with us when we come back. He's the vice chair of America First Policy Institute, Center for American Security. And we are going to talk peace in the Middle East and this president's effort, his constant, relentless pursuit to try to bring peace to a place that I think a lot of us didn't think was possible. We'll speak to him next. Don't go away.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's brought the whole world together. It's amazing. I've never seen anything. It's so good for Israel. I spoke to Bibi Netanyahu just a little while ago. He called. He said, I can't believe it. He said, everybody's liking me now. meaning him. He said, I said, they're more importantly, they're loving Israel again. And they really are. I said, Israel cannot fight the world, baby. They can't fight the world. And he understands that very well. So it's amazing the way it's all come together. And it's a beautiful picture. I don't know if it could ever happen again. It was just a set of circumstances. Like, for instance, taking out the potential nuclear power of Iran. So many different things happened that were so amazing. It's a lot of talent involved, I'll tell you, but there was a certain degree of luck, too. You know, you need luck also.
President Trump speaking last night on Sean Hannity's show regarding the peace deal, and there seems to be a lot of optimism surrounding this deal. Is this the one that is for real? Let's ask an expert guest on that. Fred Flights joins us. He's the vice chair for the America First Policy Institute Center for American Security, a former NSC chief of staff, CIA analyst, and House of Intelligence Committee staff member. His book, An America First Approach to U.S. National Security. Mr. Flights, thanks for being here today. It's an honor to have you on the show.
Hey, Annie, good to be here.
So I want to give you the opportunity to answer a very broad question. Is this peace deal, does this feel like the real thing for you, the peace between Israel and Hamas?
I'm cautiously optimistic. I think we need to look at it in two ways. First of all, the president was asked an important question at the cabinet meeting today, and that was, well, in the subsequent stages, maybe Hamas won't agree to disarm. Maybe the other provisions for rule of Gaza after the war won't work out. And he said, our priority right now is getting the hostages out. Let's do that, then we'll worry about the rest later. I think we will succeed on the other provisions, but Trump has the right approach. Let's save human lives. These hostages won't be alive much longer because of the squalid conditions they're living in these tunnels in Gaza. But I think Trump has the support of Arab states and of Israel to make this work, but I still think there's some work to do.
So at that cabinet meeting earlier, Secretary of State Rubio lauded praise on President Trump for being the man who could get this done. And it's a consistency that I hear now. And I know that President Trump likes to get credit for things. He often acknowledges that he does things and knows that the media won't give him credit for it. But it does seem like the president's number one skill, the art of the deal, might have come into play here. Why was President Trump able to get this done when other people have not?
Well, he made himself a credible mediator who was trusted by all sides. And let's keep in mind that where was the president's first working trip abroad? To the Gulf. Gave him a chance to talk to Qatar, the UAE, Saudi Arabia to get them on board. And he's made it clear to the Arabs and to the Israelis that although he's the most pro-Israel president in history, he will be tough on Netanyahu. He will make Netanyahu agree to some concessions that he may not want to make to stop the war, but he's also going to be tough on Hamas and make sure that it has no role in Gaza after this war. That's given him unusual support from the Arab states and even the Palestinian Authority, which has been supportive of Hamas, which never supports peace deals. They're supporting this one, and I think that's why we've gotten so far.
So when we're talking about peace, there are different ways, I guess, that one could define peace, but essentially the killing would have to stop. And I'm wondering if Hamas has any other option than the one that they're being offered right now. What does peace look like in your expertise after this deal has been negotiated and is sought through?
Well, you're actually raising an interesting point. What are Hamas's options? They don't have any. They have nowhere to go. No one will stand with them against this deal. And if they decide not to cooperate, Israel will simply destroy them, and Gaza will be slowly rebuilt and will put in a new interim government without Hamas. So it doesn't have anywhere else to go. So I think this is a pathway for a Gaza that is not a threat to Israeli security. Well, we can't fool ourselves. Hatred of Israel, anti-Israel Islamist groups are not going away. There will be more in the future. There will be more terrorist attacks. Israel has to keep up its guard. So does the United States. But maybe, just maybe, this particular threat will be neutralized.
So in your expertise, we're speaking with Fred Flights. He's the vice chair for the America First Policy Institute Center for American Security. The president made a bold move in, was that June, where he struck the nuclear facilities in Iran. Now, Hamas had received quite a bit of support. You said nobody's coming to Hamas's defense here, giving them an out and a different option than the one that is being presented through the mediation of President Trump in the United States. Does President Trump's decision to attack those nuclear facilities tie directly into the ability to get peace done right now?
I think so. It showed him to be a decisive president and an unpredictable one. And I think it has sent a message to Hamas and to Iran and to Russia and to China not to mess with Trump, that he will take military action if he has to. It was an enormously successful military operation in which Trump changed his policy. He was not going to do that, but he gave the Iranians a chance. They refused to negotiate in good faith, and there were consequences, just like Trump promised consequences for Hamas if it did not negotiate.
So when we're looking at what this peace might look like, and of course we have to trust but verify, as one might say, as we go through the steps, 20 steps or whatever it was that were a part of this plan, I keep hearing you say, other experts say, that you know Trump's resolve, his willingness to follow through, not just use words, but to follow through matters. That makes me wonder, if President Trump is done in 2028, when he's done in 2020, I don't want anyone to freak out here, when he's done in 2028, and let's say a Democrat is elected, maybe a Joe Biden, Kamala Harris Democrat, God forbid, gets elected in the next presidential election. Do all of the threats that have come up and boiled up in the last 4 years, do they run to the forefront and become threats once again with a different leader in charge?
I hate to think about that, but I fear that that would happen. I think Kamala Harris would have been so much worse than Joe Biden. And so many of these global problems were because of Biden's incompetence and indecision. Remember, his foreign policy priority, absolute number one priority, was not Iran or North Korea nuclear proliferation. It was climate change. And other nations were frankly laughing at us because of Joe Biden's silliness and incompetence. And it encouraged all of our adversaries to try things they would not try otherwise, such as the invasion of Ukraine, this horrible massacre that Hamas committed against Israel. American leadership matters. American presidential elections matter. And my hope is that the American people will realize this and they will not vote in another president as incompetent on national security as Joe Biden ever again.
Yeah, absolutely. You are always voting for the commander in chief. We're speaking with Vice Chair, America First Policy Institute Center for American Security. Fred Flights is with us. Before I let you go, I'd like to shift gears because that's a lot of the foreign front. But on the domestic front, somehow or another, the president is able to juggle so many things at one time. The securing of our border and now the implementation of ICE to try to remove illegal immigrants who are here, who are violent. They are getting a lot of flack for that in my home state of Illinois. I'm curious of your thoughts on the president's approach and commitment to following through on that campaign promise to say, if you're here illegally, you're going to be removed.
Well, the primary responsibility of a president is to keep the American people safe. And with these far left anarchist groups like Antifa in cities like Chicago and Portland and New York, And in Washington, the American people are not safe. And I'm very happy. I live in Washington right now, considerably safer. I see National Guard troops on the street, in the subways, people going out to dinner again. And we know this is not the case in Portland and in Chicago. And, I don't know the extent that Trump can fix this with the way the courts are ruling against him. But he's certainly sending a message to the people in these states that their elected leaders are letting them down by not keeping their cities or their states safe. And I hope they vote accordingly.
Mm. Yeah. And I think, too, having paid attention to Illinois politics quite a bit, when I see the criticisms of ICE and how ICE is operating in a state specifically like Illinois, which is a sanctuary state, they forbid their local law enforcement to cooperate with the likes of ICE. I hear Tom Homan saying this all the time, like, let us go to the jails where these people are being arrested and do our business there in the jails instead of having to do it out in the community. The J.B. Priskers of the world think that by protecting those illegal immigrants in the state, that they're going to be able to tell ICE to take a hike, that they can't enforce federal law in the state of Illinois. Do you feel as though the politics of Governor Pritzker and the state of Illinois are actually putting those migrants in more danger than they would be if the state of Illinois cooperated with those federal authorities the way other states are, so that those violent criminals could be handled in places like jails and prisons.
It's putting migrants at risk. It's putting the lives of the people of Illinois at risk. But the reason this is happening is that the Democratic Party, especially in Illinois, has been taken over by the far left. This is what this party wants. The people of Illinois have to vote out these far left Democratic radicals who are basically ruining your economy with out of control state spending and not securing the state and the cities. It's very simple. And if Trump can shine a light on that, I know it's really hard in Illinois because the gerrymandering is worse than any other state.
Yeah.
But if Trump can shine a light on that, maybe the people of Illinois will get together and say, you know, we have to vote out the people like the governor who's really endangering the state security.
Yeah. From your lips to God's ears, Fred Flights, thank you so much for coming on and talking with us. We hope you'll come back because we know that both of these stories, the foreign and the domestic, are very, very big stories. And we've not found their conclusion quite yet. So we appreciate your expertise today.
Good to be here.
Thank you so much. Fred Flights, the vice chair for the America First Policy Institute Center for American Security, former NSC chief of staff, CIA analyst, and House of Intelligence Committee staff member. He knows a few things. He's seen a few things. His book is An America First Approach to U.S. National Security. You can follow him on X at Fred Flights. We're going to take a break. The YouTube live chat poll, does President Trump deserve a Nobel Peace Prize? I'm going to do a thing on the break, and I'm going to check in and see what the other news stations, TV stations, are talking about, because Fox is covering a lot of Nobel Peace Prize talk. John Fetterman is getting some play on the old Fox News today, because he's like, yeah, why wouldn't he? Obviously, right? Well, let's see what the other folks have to say about peace in the Middle East. Do you think they're for it? We'll find out next. Don't go away. You know, I said when I'm feeling kind of good that I like to go see what the other news stations are saying?
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a good day to do that, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
So let's just hop on over. Let's skip over CNN. Let's go straight to MSNBC.
Okay.
The lead story on MSNBC, biggest picture, biggest, fattest, boldest, blackest headline on MSNBC.com, right center, is a picture of a coy-looking Chuck Schumer with his glasses placed low on his nose, which is the only place that they ever are. Headline, Democrats may have just played the shutdown perfectly.
Oh, interesting.
Not that interesting. I'm not going to click on it. Do you want me to click on it? Simone Sanders. Remember Simone Sanders?
I don't really want you to click on it, though.
Simone Sanders, I think, was supposed to be like Kamala Harris's chief of staff or something like that for a minute. And she's like, I can't do this. And then she went to MSNBC.
Oh.
Where they all go.
That headline reeks of partisanship.
Yeah. Here's another one. Top left, a President Trump kind of looking up to the top right of the photograph. Quote, we took the freedom of speech away, end quote. On First Amendment, Trump says quiet part out loud.
They took freedom of speech away. How are they saying that?
I don't. Do you want to know?
No.
Other side of the top, so third column, the one furthest to the right, it's a video of a smiling Bibi Netanyahu, some people who look happy, and looks like somebody's pouring a drink, but it's a crowd of people outside, and Donald Trump staring, not in a happy way, but just staring straight forward towards the camera. Israeli cabinet voting on peace agreement as White House remains hopeful for larger deal.
Oh, so it's Israel doing it, not Trump.
Well, the White House is hopeful for a win here. They're waiting to see if it's going to come
about. They're just hoping
about.
They can kind of piggyback on it. Huh, okay.
Another headline, James Comey could be acquitted. Trump still got what he wanted.
I don't think he did.
Trump just used the shutdown to make ICE even more cruel. Another one, Democrats embrace the shutdown as a necessary tool in, quote, ridiculously abnormal times.
So they're going to end the shutdown because that's what they want to do. But when they don't, they're smart for doing it because it's the best thing.
And if you listen to Chuck Schumer himself, he said every day gets better for the Democrats in the shutdown.
Yeah, he did say that.
Trump is threatening to declare war on the American people. That's it. That's just a really broad statement.
That's the headline every day.
Yes. And man, I'm not going to say what I'm thinking because it's just mean, but I'll just say it's a picture of Chris Hayes. I don't like making fun of people for the attributes that they can't control.
It's not
nice either. I'm sorry.
In light of the poll today,
yeah,
being does President Trump deserve a Nobel Prize? I looked up the wars that he says that he ended in a fact check. I looked actually at BBC and CBS and some others. BBC acknowledges that there are 6-7 wars that he has ended already in his first term. Here they are. Israel and Iran. That one we know is over. Well, at least for now. Pakistan and India. Rwanda and the Democratic Republic of Congo. Thailand and Cambodia. Armenia and Azerbaijan. Egypt and Ethiopia. I think we're actually past 6 now. Serbia and Kosovo. That's a lot. And those aren't headline stories. You read those, then you're like, aren't they always at war? Yeah, I think they are, which is why you have peace and you go, oh, that's like significant in that part of the country or the part of the world. Then I went and looked at this is his outgoing press release about his accomplishments, and it is long. And I had to scroll through it quite a bit to get to the key accomplishments in foreign policy and to see, because I thought, well, maybe every president gets credit for quote unquote ending small wars. We just don't hear about it, because I really genuinely wanted to see if that was true. And in his own press release, again, this is very long, so it's very extensive. Every accomplishment they could come up with is in here. It has one war that the Biden administration ended. And do you know what it was?
The war on drugs.
Boy, I wish we were right at time. That would have been a perfect end.
Argue that I'm wrong. Prove me wrong.
Well, okay. No, they list that they ended the war in Afghanistan.
Oh, that's terrible.
That's the only one that their own press team lists.
The addition to that point, though, that you're making is that's the only reason. That is the grossest version of ends justifies the means that may have existed in American history.
Yes.
Is that they only wanted to say that. And God forbid anything bad happened, we're doing it anyway. And then the worst of the worst happened. And American souls were lost. It was a complete and total debacle. Embarrassing for the country, but far more tragic for the country. And it's also that minuscule headline could happen. Gross.
It says it this way, too. Ended the longest war in American history. It's so noble. They right after the words, because this is all foreign policy stuff, it acknowledges that new wars were started. It acknowledges Ukraine, but it says it in a way, of course, that supported Ukraine as it bravely defended itself, rallied more than 50 countries to stand with Ukraine. Later, it goes into the war with Israel and Palestine and that debacle of October 7th. But I really was trying to give them credit if they had ended
it. If it were due.
But it doesn't look like they did.
I'm really intrigued right now at the different worldviews that people have and the different realities that we live in. And when you look at the MSNBC homepage, you understand why some people are living in a world that they feel they're very truly frightened for. Just like peace is breaking out across the world, across the globe. And all you're supposed to know is that Democrats have just played the shutdown perfectly. Okay. 2 o'clock hour next. Don't go away.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's
outside
not,
of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.